Hey everyone, and welcome to episode number 6 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I am joined in the studio with my good friend Ian Archibald from the Ian Archibald Band. Now, I first met Ian back in the year 2000. That's where I taught him guitar for a couple of years when he very first started. But since then, he has moved on to recording his own country rock albums and really making a name for himself in the country scene. Ian is also a guitar teacher, so he shares some tips with us about bending and improvising. Now, before we get into the interview, I'd like to announce my new packages that are available on my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com. So I have 3 new packages available to suit your needs. So package number 1, become a member for only $5 and get access for 2 months to my closed Facebook group that has weekly lessons on there. Also has videos demonstrating some of the techniques described in each of the podcasts. And you can also request songs to learn and different techniques that you'd like to work on. So it's really like having free guitar lessons, but for only $5 for 2 months. Now, package number 2 is for $10, you can get exactly the same thing, but you'll be able to get it for 3 months. And then package number 3, for $20, you can get 6 months access plus a copy of my band CD, Busted Up. And then package number 4 is the one I already have there. So for $40, you can get access to the closed Facebook group for a lifetime, plus a copy of my book, Become a Guitarist Today, book 1, and also a copy of the CD. So now you've got 4 different packages. So $5, you get 2 months. For $10, you can get 3 months. For 6 months, $20. And then for $40, you get a lifetime free. So to find out more about all my podcasts and who is coming up in future episodes, also have a look on the website under the podcast section. So let's go over to the interview now with Ian Archibald. Yep. All right, so here I am with Ian Archibald, my first live guest.
Good to be in the room.
Yeah, thanks for making it down. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem at all.
So I want to start with just like how you first started, how old you were, your influences. Sure. What made you start playing guitar?
I was about 12 years old and when I actually first started with yourself.
Yep.
And growing up, my old man and my mum sort of always had live music on. Well, not necessarily live music, but music always on, sort of just around the house, you know. And one of my sort of oldest memories or ones that sort of really made me want to play the guitar was Dad had a Laserdisc, which was kind of like the predecessor to DVDs. And so it was video and audio, and he had Pink Floyd Pulse, which was sort of like Pink Floyd's big sort of live album in, I think it was 94, 95, something like that. And Dad used to always have it on. I'd basically wake up on a Saturday morning to hearing this album on in, you know, in the big sound system that he had and all that sort of thing. So I really started with, and at first I hated it. Like, I was just like, not this bloody album again. I was just so over it. And he used to love the song Great Gig in the Sky. That was like the one normally always wake up to, because, you know, it's very sort of thing. So it was kind of like an alarm clock. Yeah. And I grew up sort of not liking it at all. And then one day we were sort of having a house party and I was probably the only kid there. So I was just sort of just sitting in the lounge room just watching the TV. And then Comfortably Numb came on. Mm. And it was the first time I actually properly watched and listened to what was happening on the TV. Normally I just sort of just, you know, walk past or just tried to ignore it or think about something else. Mm. And like the Pink Floyd Pulse, Comfortably Numb second solo. So there's obviously two solos in that song. The second solo, it's like nearly 5, 6, 7 minutes long. It's an epic solo. And I just remember just watching it, just absolutely in awe, just going, wow, like so much sound was coming from one guy with his guitar, and that was it. You know, and the whole stage show was sort of centered around this solo and all that sort of thing. And I just went, wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. I just from there it just started to sort of pick up, and then I also started really noticing Dire Straits and Mark Knopfler. And when I first started playing guitar, Mum and Dad found a CD in a bargain basement, which was it was Mark Knopfler's Sailing Philadelphia album, and that was a massive turning point for me because that album just changed music for me forever. It was probably one of the only CDs I think I've literally worn out, you know, which is hard to do with a CD, but I listened to it that many times because it was just so cool, and it had kind of this Celtic kind of vibe going on throughout it, which sort of had, I don't know, it's like it woke up an internal sort of heritage within me, which kind of went, oh, that's so cool, and just the way Mark sort of approaches guitar playing as well. And And so, yeah, that, it was just that. It was just listening to music at first and then realising that a lot of the sounds I liked was the guitar. So I just sort of looked into learning and yeah, the rest is sort of history. So,
so it was like grade six or year seven?
Well, it was sort of grade six that all of that stuff sort of happened. Then I was like, oh, this is cool and I wanted to learn. And then, and at the time, like the school didn't have any music program, anything like that. And then I went to year seven and the school that I went to, the primary school and the high school were on the same property, but they were two separate schools, and then yourself, you came in with whatever the company was,
Metro Music,
that's the one, and came in when I was in year seven, and my brother was started learning with you, I think, as well, and so I basically, I think I spoke with yourself or Metro or something and said, would it be possible for me to come in my lunch break, you know, so that way it didn't affect sort of the structure of the school and all that sort of thing, and still get lessons because I was really wanting to learn. And it, it worked out. And so, so it was year seven that I officially started, so, which I think was 2000, year 2000. So.
Okay. Well, long time ago.
Yeah, it's a few years ago now. Takes me back. The millennium bug.
Oh, that's great. So from there, how long did I teach you for? Was it 2 years or?
I think it was, yeah, 2 or 3 years because we started at school. I think I did a year at the school.
Yep.
And then I think I did a couple of years privately with you. So I think it was 2 or 3 years, something like that.
And then from there?
From there, I was getting lessons at high school with a sort of a different teacher, one of the teachers that was at the school. I was doing a lot more sport at the time as well. So I kind of just, you know, the stuff didn't line up anymore. So, and one of the good things actually was that the guy at the school was, he wasn't the greatest guitarist, but he was really theoretical. So he taught me a lot of the theory and stuff that, you know, you don't necessarily want to learn, but you sort of should learn. So he was really good at that. And then after that, I started getting lessons with John Dalymore, who was, you know, a really sort of prominent figure in guitar and sort of Australian music from, in the background though, not sort of the front guy. And, and then I learned with him for, I think, 2 years while I was sort of in VCE. And then he was teaching at JMC Academy in South Melbourne. And he sort of recommended as I was finishing VCE because I wanted to pursue music, but I wasn't exactly sure how to go about it. And he said, well, check out JMC. You know, like, it's a really great performing industry sort of place. And so I went and checked out the open day and thought it was really cool. And John was also one of the lecturers there who sort of kept doing guitar. So I ended up learning with John for about 5 years, I think.
And
yeah, that was, he was just sort of, he was just a next level dude, you know. Just being in the room with him, you're learning stuff without even actually learning, just watching the way he played and stuff. And also sort of throughout that, there was another guy called Brendan Mason who, he was in a band called Mad Lake in the 70s, Australian band. And he's still to this day my guitar tech. But and he just, he was just a kind of a mentor figure who, you know, when you're going through and be like, oh, this is really cool, you're, you know, how do I change this with the guitar or new pickups or something, you know, just all those sort of nerdy questions that and he was the guy who sort of was more than willing to help and just a really genuine, you know, supportive person as well, which is hard to find sometimes in the music industry, is to find someone who actually selfishly support you and help you with sort of stuff. Without any sort of want of return. So,
Very good. So, really, just coming into your first teacher, though.
Definitely. It all started there, definitely.
That's good.
But ironically, actually, being a teacher myself, you know, for a few years as well, is that the one thing that I picked up that you definitely did right was technique. So, make sure the technique was right, and that sort of set me up for everything else.
That's good. It's good to know.
I have a lot of students that come through that have had bad first teachers, yeah. the technique's shocking, and you almost have to start again just to get yeah. to be able to do anything. So,
yeah. I mean, it's always good for me to see my students go on to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's probably been about maybe four or five, at, yep. like yourself, and a few other guys are teaching now as well. So,
awesome.
Yeah, oh, there you go. That's good.
Good stuff. Good to see.
Yeah. So, when did you get into the reading? I know we did a little bit at the start.
Yep.
But did you keep that going?
Sight reading and notation?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Well, that was sort of where that other sort of teacher in high school was. He was kind of a bit, you know, ended up being a bit of a sort of theory Nazi. And he was a bit like, you know, you have to learn to read in order to... Because he knew I was serious about music, you know, and that I wanted to pursue it as a long-term career. And he was sort of like, you know, with a lot of other students who weren't that hardcore about a long-term sort of thing, he was just, you know, learn whatever you want. But for me, he was like, you know, you need to learn to read and understand like how rhythm affects, you know, everything really, like sort of really enforced and rhythm through notation. So understanding how those relationships work together and a little bit about harmony and stuff, but it was mostly just about, yeah, really understanding sight reading and from there. And then, yeah. And then once I sort of hit uni, obviously theory became a huge thing because the school that I went to didn't have a VCE music program. I actually, in year 12, I did music via correspondence. It's the only way I could actually do anything in regards to music. And but the only music course I could do was a course called Music Styles, which so it was more about listening and kind of analyzing music and appreciating, you know. So we focused on like Mozart's 40th in G minor. Okay. And up to that point, I'd never listened to, you know, classical music really at all. And so we had to follow the score. And so that was a real big sort of, I was really glad that I had actually worked hard on the sight reading because I could follow along with the melodies and see all the different instruments. And and so that was amazing. And then the following semester there was Kind of Blue by Miles Davis, which was the complete opposite. It was modal improvisation. And so there was no notation for it. It was just, you know, a mode.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of good was that I'd always done the notation and the improvising together and tried to find a balance. It was always more heavily towards improvisation.
Yeah.
But, and we did some school musicals and stuff as well, which was, you know, they gave us the sheet music and we had to sort of try and learn it from there. Although a lot of the time I'd sort of listen to it and kind of, like a halfway between them. So the bits that were too hard to read, I would sort of listen and work it out and that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the same thing. I've done a few musicals when my daughter was growing up.
Yeah.
You know, different plays and they'd give me the charts and after a while they got to know me and said, okay, just go for it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I get the rough charts down and then improvise over the solos and things.
And that was actually one of the things I really enjoyed about it was that I, because, you know, as a musician, when... especially a guitarist, I find that a lot of the time you're committing everything to memory.
Yeah.
And so with the musical, it was kind of nice to have it as follow your lead sheets and have the cues there as kind of the memory bank. But it was, you know, I was trying to follow along, just even just for personal practice, you know, to do that, to follow a lead sheet. There's been a few sort of sessions and stuff that I've done in the past where I sort of, these days I rely sort of heavily on rhythmic notation where I'll actually write out, you know, a lead sheet, but with the rhythmic sort of notation in there, just so I can remember at least that sort of thing, because I just don't have the time to memorize intentionally the whole songs these days. So
yeah, for sure. And you find now, I mean, you said you teach as well.
Yeah.
A lot of the younger ones just want to learn tab and not so much reading.
Yeah, definitely. And but from day one, I always, well, not day one, week two probably, I always, every single student I've ever had has always learned rhythmic notation at a minimum. Yeah. I actually don't teach much notation these days because I just find that realistically, even in sort of my own playing, is that it's great to know, but I don't actually use proper notation that often.
Yeah.
It's more the rhythmic notation that I'll use every day.
Yeah.
It's more like the background theory that comes from the actual proper notation that I use on a regular basis, but not actually writing it on the stage.
Yeah.
So I don't do much of that with my own students, but the rhythmic notation is very, very heavily sort of a part of what I teach and what I use. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I know now, like with the exams, they've even changed the ANSCA music exams, where you've got performance exams.
Yeah.
So you don't always have to know how to read.
Yeah, okay.
But again, like what you said, knowing the rhythms and...
Yeah.
So that's really good. That's...
Yeah.
Just encourages kids to do the exams and...
Yeah, exactly.
Get into a bit of a live performance.
And, yeah.
So that's good. So your main inspiration David Gilmour.
Yeah, David Gilmour, Mark Knopfler, probably the two, you know, bigger ones. And then
yeah.
And then sort of as I sort of hit around about 17, 18, I fell in sort of just by chance into country music.
Yeah.
And so
yeah, so I was gonna ask you about like how that come about.
Yeah, yeah. Well yeah. It's a similar story to sort of like the Pink Floyd story was that Mum used to always have the country music channel on Foxtel and we'd always have it on. And same thing, used to hate it driving nuts. And like 99% of Australians, you know, country music's, you know. Yeah. You know, but it's not. Country music is yeah, yeah. That was country music in the '50s and sixties, yeah. And it's nothing like that anymore. Mm. And but being the cliche sort of thing and being, you know, around 17, 18 as well, being a little smart ass and, you know, knowing everything.
Yeah.
I never really listened to it. The only one I'd kind of tune into was Keith Urban. Yeah, and that was just because he was just a freak, you know, and you'd listen to some of the stuff. And it was kind of, to me at the time, it was kind of a bit cheesy, some of the stuff he was doing. Mm. But that was like the bleached mullet era of Keith Urban. So that was almost kind of the cheesy era of Keith Urban. Yeah. So it all sort of lined up as well. It was at that time I started to learn to sing.
Yeah.
And having a bass baritone voice, which I hadn't known or anything, and trying to sing up until that point, you know, just by myself, like it was just, it sounded like a really, really, you know, in pain cat. It was not pretty. And a lot of the time it was just because I just couldn't get anywhere near the pitch of the notes because 90% of the people I listened to were such high pitch singers or just, you know, tenor male. So really just up in the register. And without any training to try and get anywhere near those notes was impossible. Mm. And so once I started lessons, I found out I was a bass baritone, which sort of answered a lot of questions. The vocal coach was basically like, you can listen to a lot of Nick Cave stuff. And I was like, yay, you know, like Nick's an amazing artist, but it just his music wasn't anything that I liked.
Yeah.
And then by chance, I sat down in front of the TV one day, rechanged the channel, and a guy called Trace Adkins came on. And do you know Trace?
No.
Okay. So Trace is like 6'6", and he's this absolute mountain of a dude. Like he's muscly, he's just like the epitome of masculinity. You know, you look at him and go, yeah, yeah, you know, he's a big cowboy.
Yeah.
And the music was this sort of bluesy rock crossover thing. It was really kind of dark and ominous, but in that cool kind of way.
Mm.
And then he started singing. His first line was, I'm gonna go on a red eye. And I was like, whoa, that's so deep. And it was, so I just realized that, hang on a sec, like there's a genre of music that actually celebrates bass baritones and deeper voices. And so then I got into Trace's stuff and he had a lot of guitar driven music, you know, like one of the riffs that kind of. You know, and it was just this really fat, huge sound. It's like, that's not country, but it was. Yeah. It was modern country.
Yeah.
And so it sort of, it worked for me on both levels. That it had my kind of rock background, but it had some songs I could actually sing.
Yeah.
And so I kind of fell into country through that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your style, what more, country rock, would you say?
Country rock, yeah, definitely country rock. And like I was just saying, it's that, it's not intentionally country rock. It's because I love country music, but all my past and heritage is all deeply kind of rock music.
Yeah,
so without trying, it just becomes country rock. So
it's
more kind of like the music is rock and the lyrics and the harmonies and the, you know, the stories and everything with the songs are kind of the country thing.
Yep.
I mean, I've started adding some more country guitar playing within it, but I'm not the best country guitarist. So it's kind of, it's a real hybrid these days. We sort of found these days that, we're kind of like, if you take modern country, what it is in Nashville and everything at the moment, you sort of cross that with like traditional Aussie rock, you know, like AC/DC you know, like Cold Chisel and even sort of, and I've forgotten the name now.
Angels.
That sort of like heavy eight rhythm sort of stuff like that. Just really sort of chunky guitar driven music.
Yeah.
Sort of blending that with that modern Nashville sort of thing. And that seems to kind of be where our sound is at the moment.
Okay. So you're the main songwriter for your band?
Yeah, main songwriter at the moment. I've started doing, you know, a lot more co-write. Up until sort of about a year or two ago, I'd written everything just by myself.
Okay.
And then I did a co-write with a guy named Troy Kemp, who sort of used to be a really big name. Sorry, that sounded harsh. Not used to be. Still is a big name in the country music scene. But he was in a duo called McAllister Kemp. And they were pretty much as big as you could get in Australian country music. They were huge. And they were country rock.
Okay.
And they sort of went their separate ways, and so he's a lesser name by himself, or, you know, doesn't have the huge success that they had, but yeah. He's still an amazing artist and songwriter. And so by chance, I ran into them. They were doing like a signing and meet and greet on the street in Tamworth during the Country Music Festival. And I just went up and said g'day, and sort of said, you know, I knew that those two did a lot of songwriting with other people.
Yeah.
And just sort of said, you know, hey, how do I go about writing a song with one of you guys? And they both went, here's our number, just give us a call. Oh, and wow. I was like, wow, who does that? Yeah, so
that's great.
And Troy lives in Newcastle, so I flew up to Newcastle to write a song with him.
Mm.
And actually, that song that we wrote is going to be the first single that we're bringing out in September, hopefully.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I look forward to hearing it.
Same.
So basically, when you write the songs, you get the idea down, then take it to the guys and do like that?
These days, normally, I haven't written much lately because I'm now a dad, so I sort of...
Congratulations.
Thank you. So a lot of my time's been sort of spent up, you know, with the last sort of year to 6 months, I've just been really adapting to sort of parent life. So, I'm starting to get back into the writing now. But normally what I sort of do is that I'll come up with an idea, then I'll normally sort of demo it in, you know, Logic or Pro Tools or something like that, put some, you know, sample drums and do some programming and stuff like that, add a few guitar parts and some vocal harmonies and stuff. And it depends on how fleshed out the song is in my own head, you know. If I've got a really strong idea, I'll almost demo it out as a whole song, you know, and then I'll take it to the guys and I might sort of tell them, hey, play this. And there's other ones where I've got like a good idea, but I know that they will have a better, you know, idea than what I will in some of the bits. So I'll take it to them and say, this is what I got so far, you know, give me something.
Okay.
So it's a little bit up in the air, but rarely have we actually written as a whole unit yet, but that's something that we're looking to do soon.
Yeah. And so your brother's the bass player, Cameron?
Cameron's, he's the bass player, yeah.
So do you ever like get him up to... do the bass for the recording, or you try and do it?
Not really. Actually, a lot of the times the demo is just a bass less. You know, I normally put that many guitar parts in there that it's, and it sort of came about because when I first started the sort of Ian Archibald band, it was originally just Ian Archibald. And I started it was because I'd been in a few bands and, you know, someone had left or someone didn't want to do it anymore or something, you know, just same old stuff that happens in the music every day. And I got sick of working really hard, getting some sort of success, and then it all fall apart because someone just decided they'd had enough.
Mm.
And so you couldn't use that same band name anymore because they'd crack the shits with it and all that sort of thing. So I just went, if I just make a project that's my name, I can rotate anyone in if I need to, and it can just keep going. And it sounds like a real selfish thing to name a band after yourself, but I just did it. I just wanted some stability.
That's right.
And, and so I used to just write everything, and then I had some mates who were session musicians, and we just sort of get together once a month or something and say, oh, look, here's some new ideas. I reckon if you play this, you play that, da-da-da-da-da. And they just, oh, yeah, sweet, and they'd do it. We'd record a live demo, and then, you know, do a few rehearsals, then we'd do a gig. And so, and that's sort of why I just got in that habit of writing kind of the whole thing as a demo. And then giving it to the guys, whereas these days, because I've got a permanent lineup, it's more I can actually sort of say, hey, here's kind of something, what have you got that sort of comes back? So
And you've got another guitarist too, actually?
There is, Luke's the other guitarist in the band, and he's sort of more country guitarist these days, so it's sort of cool. He does more of the country sort of pick, and I do more sort of the rock stuff, and we sort of swap with the lead playing as well as the rhythm and all that sort of thing. So
very good.
He's great. He's a really good guitarist,
and
as you would know as well, he's this very egoless guitarist, which is very hard to find. So
good.
So we don't ever really have any issues with crossing each other's lines or anything like that. It's like man, that clashes. It's all right, I'll do something else. It's good.
Very good. Now, do you have a favourite song to play live, whether it be your own or somebody else's?
No, not really. No? That's a hard question. I understand exactly where you're coming from, but I don't have... a lot of the time, for me, it's more what the crowd gives back that I enjoy. It's not necessarily... I've sort of stopped caring so much about internally... how I'm feeling about music. It's more, which is, I'm starting to feel is almost the wrong thing because I'm starting to, I've had some moments where I've lost a little bit of love for it because I've just like, the crowd doesn't give anything back. So I'm like, I must've been a better performance. Whereas it could have just been the crowd just weren't into it that night or didn't want to interact, or they're not a country rock crowd or whatever. So I love playing our originals. It's just, you know, that's always a lot of fun. So especially when I think back and think of that original rough demo or something, you know, where I've just come up and gone like, hey, that's a cool lick, you know. And then you see it become a song, and then you see the crowd losing their mind to this song. Yeah. And then you hit the solo button, you play the solo, and you're like, yeah, that was fun. You know? And so that, and then the other song that I just really enjoy playing, which we do in a cover, is Boys of Summer by Don Henley. I love the guitar parts in it. They're not epically intricate, but they just fit the song so perfectly. And so I love trying to play within a song. You know, I don't like sort of like how Malmsteen and some of those cats, they just shred. Like, one, I'm not fast enough to play, so I probably hate them out of envy. But also, I just find that it's just so much nicer to play what the song asks of you and not, you know, what you want to put in the song sometimes. So,
good. Now, how about exercises and everything for guitar playing? Do you have a favourite one that you like to play, or like as a warm-up before a gig or anything?
Yeah, sort of. The only one I really sort of do these days, I just do a slow chromatic scale, so, which I think was lesson one, you know. And it's just, I just find that just sort of warms up the fingers. And I just do that slowly, and then I try and, you know, just try and get some hammer on. Even if it's not crisp or perfect, it's just to get the fingers moving. And then, normally I'm just sort of, and then sort of doing like, you know, because we do a lot of hybrid pickings, just stuff like that, just to get the fingers going. Half the time, I actually don't even have the guitar turned up, so I'm just doing it by myself on the neck, and so half the time it's not even something that sounds any good. It's just to get the fingers moving more than anything.
I do the same thing, but not chromatic. Just starting from the fifth, all the way down. And then back up.
Yeah, exactly.
I find you do that for whatever, 5-10 minutes.
Yep.
All your fingers warmed up.
Yep.
Yeah, you can even like go down the fretboard all the way to the 12th. And you've covered everything.
And also, depending on the night as well, and depending which guitar I'm playing, certain guitars just feel like home.
Yep.
And some of them, they just feel that little bit foreign when you first pick them up. So yeah, sometimes I will go up the neck and I normally sort of will do a couple of bends as well, just to feel, you know, just the tension of the strings. You know, like, I haven't played this Strat in a while, and you can tell. There it is. So, whereas my Gretsch has a completely different feel, and then the Gibsons have a completely different feel. So it's just to sometimes just to find where that actual pitch is again, and just stuff like that. It's it's nothing too hectic, because I'm sort of a lead singer. I try and spend most of my time warming up my voice more than the guitar these days. So,
okay. Yeah. Now, how often do you change your strings and your guitars?
Depends how sort of hectic we're gigging. I used to basically change them 2 to 3 gigs I'd used to sort of do. And we were doing a lot of 3-hour shows. So, you know, that was pretty... And we were nearly playing... It was nearly every weekend I was changing strings.
But
these days, just because I've gotten lazy, I normally, at most, will leave them a month. After a month, I'm definitely changing them. But but if we're doing a lot of gigs, it might go back to being, you know, every weekend. So I just use the Daario 10s on my Strats, and on my Fenders, and I use the Daario 11s on my Gibsons.
Yeah, which made me think of that about the bends.
Yeah.
Because you've got the 2 different gauges.
Yeah, exactly.
You use both at the gigs?
Yeah, normally.
And so you have to really think about like your bends, you know, because you've got different gauge.
Not so. The reason sort of why I changed the gauge between the two is because on a Gibson, 11s kind of feel like 10s on a Strat.
Okay.
You know, and so that was sort of why I started using 11s on the Gibsons, because I used to overbend, and I used to, you know, when you hit the strings too hard, it goes just as a, you know, it goes a bit sort of out of tune, it goes sharp. And so I noticed that with my Gibsons, I just felt like I was hammer fisting all the time.
Yeah.
And so I spoke with Brendan, and he said, look, try going up a gauge. And the other thing as well, because we do everything in E flat.
Yeah.
So I used to play 9s and 10s. So 9s to the Fenders, 10s to the Gibsons. And then when we decided that E flat, especially for the voice again, the E flat was kind of more where we were going to go. I just, the 9s felt a bit loose, and it didn't feel right. So I went to 10s. Then once I went 10s on the Fenders, the 10s on the Gibsons felt wrong, so I went to 11s, and that's It's really just a matter of, it just, so I don't have to think too hard about that stuff. Yeah. I can just play and so it feels right. So, yeah.
Oh, excellent. Good. Now, would you have any tips for upcoming guitarists?
Yeah. Look, it's just commitment and just practice, you know, like, and try and look at practice as not being a chore, but being something enjoyable. And ironically these days, because I have such little time, is that I actually find myself wishing I could practice as much, you know.
Yeah.
When I first started, I was doing an hour to 2 hours nearly every night, you know, and it was, and I just loved every second of it. Although there was stuff that I couldn't do, or I was finding, you know, it's kind of like a relay race, is that you get to a point, you go, I can't go anymore. And so, you know, I can't get past this part. And then next thing you know, next week, you've got past it. And that feels like it was so easy. And then the next one feels like the hard part.
Mm.
And then you get past that. And so it's just that progressive sort of overload where you just, and then you look back like a year later and go, wow, like, look how much I've learned. Look, what used to be so epically hard is now like, I don't even think about it.
Yep.
And so it's just, yeah, just enjoying practice and finding a good teacher that sort of inspires you as well and just doesn't sort of go, oh yeah, here's this, here's a photocopy out of a book, you know. It's like they'll listen to you and go, what songs do you want to learn? Okay, why do you want to learn that? Oh, because you really like that riff. Well, maybe we'll just learn the riff, you know. Like, you don't necessarily have to learn a whole song. If you just really dig that riff, learn that riff, you know, and then move to the next song, eventually you'll end up with a whole song. But it's just a matter of just continually going for stuff that you like, and if it's, you know, too hard for you but you really like it, you're going to work harder to want to learn it. So that's what I find, as opposed to going, here's a sheet, you know, get to that point and then go to the next point or something like that. So that'd be my only tip, is find something that inspires you and try to pursue it and keep going with it.
I mean, I find that it's probably one of the things I do with my students. You know, I always ask them what songs they like to learn or what style.
Yeah.
If they can't think of one, you know, what do their parents like? So at least they can identify with the song.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, if they do say something like Malmsteen, then, you know, I might just simplify it a bit and then slowly build up to the song. So
I sort of, the other way I like to explain to my students is that if you imagine yourself or your guitar playing as an open toolbox, you know, and so every time you learn a new chord or a new scale or a new bend or a new technique or a slide or a hammer-on or whatever, it's just a new tool you put in your toolbox, so that by the time you get to a certain point, you've got to open that toolbox, you'll have everything already in there that you need. And so all of a sudden, a song that might have used to take a month to learn, you can nearly play it on the spot because you've done, you know, the elements within it in other songs before. And that's one of the other things, is actually teaching students, you know, for example, is that a D major chord is not just first finger on the second fret, and a third on the third. It's like, this is a D major chord. You're going to use a D major chord in all these other songs. So learn it as a D major chord, not just the second chord in that song. So, and that's what I've found is really, and also even for myself, you know, when I'll be playing, I'm terrible at remembering scales. So I do a lot of, when I improvise, it's just following my ears. And I mean, I know the theory behind it all. And so it's, a lot of the time it's, I follow the ears, but then when I hit a point, I'll go, oh, yeah, and then use the theory to sort of dig me out of a hole or something. So it's that kind of concept as well, is just remember everything that you've learned will help you with what you're going to learn. So, and not expecting to be able to play the final product straight away. There's nothing wrong with, you know, like one part of a song that might be too hard. Just isolating that bit and working on that until you get it. And then even breaking it down into smaller exercises, you know. Like one of the things I had a lot of trouble with when I first started to country music was like those pedal steel beds. And so it was, how could I, one of them I was bending the bottom string up a bit sharp. So, you know. And so I started isolating and went, okay, well, let's just get the first bend running. And then try and hold that note. And then I just play that note and bend the other string and see if I would keep it in tune. And then it would. And then I'd start to work towards it. And then I'd try to and doing the opposites and stuff. Until I got to the point where I was like, okay, so each individual element of that one skill I've sort of got, now I just need to put it all together. And so that was kind of a good, another really handy thing that I've found is to just allow yourself to be a learner. You know, you don't have to be an accomplished guitarist straight away. And you know, even to this day, I'm still 110% a learner.
Yeah. And do you have many students improvising now?
I do, yeah. I've sort of scaled back my teaching a bit. So yeah. I had some amazing students. I've been teaching for 4 or 5 years. And okay. We were doing some heavy, heavy stuff, and it was so much fun. And, you know, it was kind of like, it was a challenge for me each week as well to give them some new stuff to learn. And then I sort of started teaching like little kids again, and it was just beginner stuff. I got so bored with it, and I just there's only so many ways you can play a G major, so you know. So I sort of have like in between students at the moment where I haven't really got anyone doing epic improvising.
Yep.
But we're doing more kind of like melodic stuff, like a lot of finger picking and kind of stuff like that. So it's intricate and in a bit different direction. So.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I've got a few students, even like the younger ones, that probably really aren't up to the stage improvising.
Yep.
But, you know, just giving that pentatonic, or even like the first part of it.
Yeah.
And just see what melodies they do come up with, with 5, 6 notes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's amazing what they can come up with, some of them,
Yeah.
I mean, some of them just get lost and like, whatever.
Yeah.
But then others like, going, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I do the blues note, but
Well, that's it. Well, sometimes I do it by accident. You go, hey, that sounded great.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's how the blues was invented. So, look, definitely with the students I do, I always encourage every student to improvise. And now, one of the things that I actually sort of say these days is a lot of the times is I'll give them. Sometimes I've found that in the past I sort of tainted someone's improvising a little too much. Like I went, you could do this or you could do this.
Yep.
And so they were just copying me and they weren't really exploring their own sort of sound.
Yep.
So I started just saying, okay, here's some scales, basic scales, you know, like a pentatonic or, you know, a major one octave or a minor one octave.
Yep.
And I'd say, now look up YouTube, look up C major backing.
Yep.
And then just play over the top. Some notes you find sound really good, some notes don't sound so good. And just find your own thing, and then the next week they come back and they've got something really unique. And some students just take to it like a fish in water, you know. They're just, you're like, wow, there's some really cool ideas that you got there, you know. Yeah. And then other ones, it's like you say, it's just, they're pretty much just going. And the ones that really excite me are the ones who use rhythm, you know, like they'll like, you know. You know, stuff like that, where they'll and the ones that really excite me, the ones who leave space.
Yeah.
They don't play the whole way through. It's just like you go. And they'll just sit there. And you're like, yes! You've got the art of improvising in week one.
That's so, really good, yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably a good factor for people.
Yeah.
Getting into improvising
to
do exactly what you just said then.
Yeah, don't be afraid to leave space. Yeah. Like, and for me, that was Pink Floyd. You know, Pink Floyd was about... The song Us and Them is probably a brilliant example. Just the vocals, you know.
Mm.
You've got that us. And then without the repeats in there, it's just us.
Yeah.
And them. You know, two bars of nothing. You know? Like it's... That there's something magical about being confident enough to leave space and to use space and dynamics as a big part of your playing. Is that you don't have to be playing all the time to be impressive. There's some guitarists will play two notes and you just go, why can't I be like them? You know, and then other guitarists will play a million notes and you go, oh yeah. You know, and then on the flip side, sometimes you get someone who plays too minimally and you're like, yeah, you could do with a few notes because. There's just a feel about certain guitarists that, you know, like Stevie Ray Vaughan is probably one cat who comes to mind, who was another influence in my playing, but he sort of treaded that balance perfectly, you know, like he could just play one note. And I think he got that from sort of Buddy Guy sort of thing, you know, it was just this huge bend. It was just like a big sort of, and just hold it for like, you know, two bars and then you go, you know, and then you just do something crazy and which was uniquely Stevie and you're like, wow, both of them were amazing, which is pretty rare to find that in one guitarist.
So. Yeah. No, that's good. So now going on to your music.
Yep.
So how can people get onto you? And
look, the easiest way is just, you know, just Google Ian Archibald Band. Like it we've sort of got to that point now where we're starting to come up number one when you search Ian Archibald Band.
Oh, good.
But yeah, or ianarchibald.com. But the hardest thing is that my name's spelt weird. So it's I-A-I-N
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, ironically, out of anything in the world that Ian Archibald in the UK, who's just IANArchibald.com, which I've tried to get in contact with him and buy his domain, but I just can't. He happens to be an amateur musician. You know?
Oh, really?
So everyone goes to that website first, and they're just like, yeah, man, your website's a bit rough, you know. Nice pictures of your cat, though. You know? It's like, yeah, it's the wrong website. Facebook, you know, as well. Just search Ian Archibald Band.
Yeah, and how many albums you got now?
We've got two. We're about to bring out, well, two EPs, and we're about to bring out an album, really soon.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So September.
Mid-September we're aiming for. So
it'll be really soon.
really soon. So if we miss that, really soon.
That's good. I think that pretty much covers everything.
Cool.
So thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Always fun.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, damn straight.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Now I want to talk a little bit more about the bends as well, as Ian described. So we're going to use the 10th fret on the B string, which is the A note. Now, if I want to bend that up to a tone, which is two frets away, so I play the 12th fret, then listen to that note, and I want to bend up to that note. Or you can do a half bend, which is one fret away. So you've got half bend, full bend. You can also add the note under the string to play the same note. So for example, if I play the A note on the second string, so I'm wanting to bend that up to the B note, which is the seventh fret on the first string. So if I play them together, so that's a really good way to find out that you got the right note for the bend as well. And from there, you can do all different techniques. You can bend up and play the note underneath. You can also use vibrato on bends. You can also do a tone and a half. So from that A note, I want to play the C note, which is a bit harder to get. Now, if you want to find out more about the bends, you can head on over to my Facebook group and see the video there about the bends. Quickly thank two sponsors. The first one is Custom Guitar Picks, run by Gus. This is one of the quickest service you will find for custom-made picks, and you can do it all online. Design your own picks. Just head to customguitarpicks.com.au. There you can select the thickness of your pick, the colour, what type of pick you want. You can also upload your own artworks, then submit it online, and it's all done. You can also check out the different categories of other picks to choose from. The other sponsor is Guitar World, run by Mick. Guitar World used to be a shop in the High Street, Northcote. Now Mick is concentrating on repairs, services and setups. So Mick has been doing all my services for the past 20 years on all my guitars, and every time I get it back, it feels like a brand new guitar. So call Mick on 0476 937 025. So thank you once again, Ian, for a great insight to his guitar playing and for demonstrating some great techniques. Now make sure you check out his Facebook page or website this Friday for some very exciting news. And don't forget to tune in on Saturday, where I interview Steve Janeski from the band Radio Sun and Black Majesty. So until then, keep jamming.